Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, April 6th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, For the Common Good. Jill Purs, Urbana High, U of I grad, being honored for a lifetime of providing health care in some of the world's most impoverished countries. Urbana. When she first got there, there was nothing she could do to save them. She couldn't save the babies and children from the deadly measles virus that swept through the rural Tanzanian community where she was the sole physician. I saw 2 to 3 children suffocate to death every day, Dr. Susan Nageli said. I didn't have oxygen, let alone a ventilator. So we lost a lot of kids because of the lack of resources. Nageli knew she would likely see measles cases in Tanzania. When the 1973 Urbana High School alumna didn't count on was that she'd land smack dab in the middle of an outbreak. The typical patient would have been very malnourished, a child under the age of 5, so skinny, the skin kind of just hanging off the bones, she said. Their eyes would be full of pus and swollen shut because they were malnourished. Their hair would be kind of reddish and very thin, sparsely. Their bellies would be very distended because they usually had worms. Nageli was in Tanzania with Mary Noel Lay Missionaries, a nonprofit formed in 1911. By the U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops. She had just finished her family practice residency at Carbondale Memorial Hospital and knew she wanted to practice medicine overseas. The organization needed healthcare workers in East Africa, and she signed on. She would end up working in Tanzania, Sudan, and Kenya for the next 33 years. She opened hospitals, clinics, tuberculosis treatment centers, primary health care centers, and mobile outreach clinics, treating tens of thousands of patients in dire circumstances. Her work would end up earning her the American Medical Association Medal for Valor for her courage in extraordinary circumstances. But the vaccination programs meant the most to the physician who will be honored Friday with a Distinguished Alumni Award from the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation. I will say from the start, she said, the best thing I did in my career was vaccination. Just do your best, Susan. Nageli's first assignment was to rebuild a healthcare clinic in Kawak, Tanzania. It was 1985 when she arrived in an East African country that at the time was among the poorest on the planet and remained so 40 years later. Many people were very corrupt in the government and they stole and looted. The country had just all fallen apart. Nothing was functioning, Nageli said. You couldn't buy a kilo of sugar and you couldn't buy a liter of petrol. That's part of why the church was trying to get this health clinic back on its feet, she added. And part of the reason why there were so many measles cases. They didn't have programs for vaccinations. We set one up immediately. Containing a measles outbreak in that kind of environment was going to be more than Nageli thought she could handle. She had never seen a single case of the highly contagious disease during her medical training. At first, I was worried that I wouldn't be good enough, that I wouldn't know enough, she said. That's when I quickly realized I was all they had. I was the best that was available. I certainly didn't have all the answers. I improved over time as I learned things, but I realized, just do your best, Susan, because there's nobody else in this situation that can help them. Nageli worked tirelessly to get as many children vaccinated as possible. I remember making charts and keeping stats on all the cases, she said. After 3 years, the kids weren't dying anymore, but we still had measles. It took another 3 years before we didn't have any more measles cases coming in. In the end, it took 6 years for Nageli to eradicate measles in the community, which she did while at the same time treating patients for numerous other conditions and diseases. Nageli remembers being awake for nearly 72 hours during the cholera outbreak in 1987. With no other doctors in the area, she was on her own, with no backup to call in. If she slept, people would die. She powered through, as she would do time and again over the next three decades. You are just trying to stay alive. Next stop, Sudan. When Nageli heard a bishop in Sudan needed help, once again, she answered the call. In a country beset by a civil war when she arrived, this time she stayed for 12 years. At one point, she supervised a team in the community of Nanyangachur, working on a plateau so remote it could only be accessed on foot. With coolers on their backs, her team hauled over 1,000 temperature-controlled polio vaccines to the area. Advancing military, inaccessible plateaus, disease outbreaks, nothing would deter her from getting vaccines and medical care to those who needed it most. She credits her Catholic faith and the people around her for helping her get through the hardest times. I mean, we're all in the same boat, she said. At this point, when they're dropping bombs from up there, you know, it doesn't make any difference what language you speak, how much money you have. You are just trying to stay alive. It's kind of hard to describe, really, how powerful these relationships and emotions can be in terrible situations. But it was their commitment to one another, living by their values, the whole crux of what it means to be human and why we live and what we want to do now and tomorrow. One of Nageli's proudest moments came on August 25th, 2020, when the World Health Organization announced that polio had been eradicated from the continent of Africa. She had been working with South African President Nelson Mandela's Kick Polio Out of Africa campaign from the very start in 1996. We live this already. Today, the 1978 University of Illinois alumna is back home in Urbana, taking care of her elderly mom and 13-year-old dog, Pepper. Nageli retired from Mary Knoll Lay Missioners, but not from advocating for sound, evidence-based public health policy. The world-renowned physician and humanitarian wants our community to learn from her more than three decades of overseeing life-saving vaccination programs in the impoverished countries of Tanzania, Sudan, and Kenya. Measles was declared eliminated in the United States in 2000 by the World Health Organization, but one of the most contagious of infectious diseases has reemerged since, with 483 confirmed U.S. cases already this year, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's going to take a long time to get rid of it again, Nageli said. It's really heartbreaking to hear that people are dying from it. Measles vaccinations can be given at 15 months in the U.S. That leaves kids under that age at risk for contracting the virus. In order for the virus not to spread to infants and others who can't get vaccinated due to medical reasons, 95% of the population must be vaccinated, said Nageli, debunking claims by so-called anti-vaxxers. I'm giving you these facts from reality. We live this already, she said of the years she spent helplessly watching babies suffocate from the measles virus. That's the credibility that I have. For the common good, let each one of us who can be vaccinated get vaccinated. Jill Purs of Savoy writes for the News Gazette. She can be reached at jillpyrz@gmail.com. Continuing on the front page from the Champaign County Courts, man who shot at elderly couple gets 55 years. Officer testifies he may be connected to four other shootings. This is by Luke Taylor. A man who has been charged with numerous firearm-related crimes in Champaign-Urbana and acquitted of nearly all of them has been sentenced to 55 years in prison after being convicted of attempted murder in a 2022 shooting. Shamario Brown, 27, of Sandwich, was found guilty in February of being involved in the shooting an elderly couple in Champaign, leaving both with severe injuries. Champaign Police Officer Nathaniel Epling testified at Friday's sentencing hearing that Brown's DNA and the weapon he apparently used could also be connected to four other firearm-related crime scenes in CU from 2016 through 2022. He said he discovered this after submitting Brown's DNA and casings found at the scene of the September 8, 2022 shooting of the elderly couple to national police databases. Two of the events, in which a total of five victims were struck by gunfire, were within a month of the shooting. However, since Brown has not been charged in any of those incidents, Champaign County Judge Matthew Lee said he gave very little weight to those accusations when considering his sentence. Brown's attorney, Bart Beals, also suggested that it would be bypassing due process to consider Brown as definitively involved in any of the shootings Epling identified. Those incidents were also separate from at least four other shooting incidents Brown has been charged in and acquitted of since 2015. One of the victims of the 2022 shooting shared her impact story during the sentencing hearing, highlighting the health issues she faces to this day. Her husband, who was diagnosed with cancer prior to the shooting, has since passed away. The surviving victim said before insurance, her medical costs to date have accumulated to $187,550. Her most recent surgery was this year, and she still has a fragment of a bullet lodged behind her eye. The woman has previously described the events of the shooting in Brown's trial and one held for his co-defendant, Kenichi Townsend, who was found guilty of involvement in the shooting and ultimately sentenced to 80 years in prison. She said she was in the passenger seat as her husband backed their Jeep Grand Cherokee into the driveway of their new home when individuals she could not see began firing from the yard, hitting the vehicle 17 times. O'Shea Cotton, a man who had testified against Brown in a 2017 murder case in which he was acquitted, drove the same vehicle. Investigators believe Brown and the men he was with intended to target Cotton, hitting the elderly couple in a case of mistaken identity. But as Lee said during the sentencing hearing, Brown's intent does not change the legal implications of what he did. Brown's mother also spoke, requesting a lighter sentence for her son, considering he has young children and helped her raise his siblings. "My son is strong. He is strong-minded. He is not a monster. He is not mean," she said. "Everybody loves Shamario." She said her son had a bad past, but that he had changed and it no longer defined him. She said she believes in second chances. "My son is not what you guys see today," she said. Brown also spoke briefly, apologizing to the victim for all she's gone through and asking for a chance to rehabilitate himself. Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson acknowledged the victim's pain as well as that of Brown's mother. "All of that pain, the combined pain that's in this room, is a direct result of the actions of Shamario Brown," Larson said. Larson called this crime not only a physical attack on the victims, but an attempted attack on the justice system itself, since the likely intent of the shooting was to target a man for testifying. A strong message has to be sent to the defendant and to everyone else in the community that thinks they can intimidate witnesses or that they can use violence to derail the justice system, Larson said. Beals pointed out that the maximum sentence of 60 years would put his client behind bars for over twice the current length of his life. And he said, violence in Champaign-Urbana will not cease just because Brown is in prison. A 60-year sentence will not send a message to the areas of society that need to receive that message, other than the fact that the justice system, quite frankly, in many respects, is blind as far as being blind to the root issues that lead to this continuing suffering, Beals said. Beals requested a sentence of 12 to 15 years. In his decision, Lee said that a lifestyle of violence is too common for young people in the community, and he did not blame Brown for being raised in that environment. But again, even that factor has to be tempered by the reality that Mr. Brown is no longer a child, Lee said. Lee called into question Brown's mother's assertions and those in letters of support that Brown truly was a good man, not the version who committed violent acts. Both are truly who he is, Lee said. What you do is who you are in this lifetime. Since Brown was convicted of 2 counts of attempted murder and 2 counts of aggravated battery, the maximum possible sentence was 60 years. Lee said he reduced it slightly, in part, to account for some discrepancies in time served awaiting trial, which overlapped with time served in another case. With that resolved, Brown has credit for 86 days time served. 30 years of his sentence are for the shooting of the female victim, with the remaining 25 for the shooting of her husband, whose injuries were significantly less serious. Continuing on the Inside the Front Page, we have Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. Since renovations were completed at the high school, Champaign Central's Jazz Festival, now in year 56, has become a mix of performing and sightseeing. That was clear at last year's event when John Curry guided a tour that took Central alumni to all the new spaces. From Decker Theater to the band room, they were like, "My goodness, this is unbelievable," said Curry, the school's band and orchestra director, who's been at the school since 1998. "I spent 25 years working in filth. Now I pinch myself every day." One of the state's longest-running high school festivals wraps up Saturday, starting with an open-to-the-public, free-of-charge clinic at 3 p.m. at Combs Gym, put on by Ben Carasquillo, a trombone professor at Eastern Illinois. From 5 to 10 p.m., dressed to the hilt middle and high school students from Champaign, Mahomet, Rantoul, Paxton, and Urbana take over. The performances take place on stages built in Combs Gym and Seeley Hall, decorated to make it look like a nightclub, Curry said. The best part for the students is getting to play in front of other kids and to see what's possible. Sixth graders will watch the high school kids and then say, "I want to be in that band one day." That's a huge plus. The festival is part of a musical month at Central. On April 28th, the U.S. Air Force's Airmen of Note will perform at Decker Theater. There is no admission, but tickets are required at the 750-seat venue. Details at newsgazette.com. And continuing in history, area history in 1925, 25 motorcyclists will take part in a fox and hound chase scheduled to start from Park and Goodwin Streets. The man, who is to be the fox, gets a 5-minute start ahead of his pursuers, the hounds. He is to wear a number unknown to the hounds. When a hound gets close enough to the fox to read the number, he is considered to have won the chase and caught the fox. If the fox can make a circuit through the adjacent county and return within the hour, The fox wins the chase and the prize. In 1975, Janine S. Cohen, a senior in communications at the University of Illinois, has been awarded $100 for a Datsun advertisement she designed for America Magazine, the Datsun Student Travel Guide, which is circulated through student travel offices on college campuses. Cohen's winning entry was one of seven chosen for publication in the magazine, according to Gordon E. White, associate professor of advertising. Over 800 entries were submitted in the competition. In 2010, the next University of Illinois president could come from a list of 10 candidates, all of whom are either university presidents or provosts. The search, which began when President B. Joseph White stepped down after an admissions scandal last summer. International history, today's highlight. On April 5th, 1933, as part of his New Deal programs, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed an executive order establishing the Civilian Conservation Corps, a Depression-era work relief program for single men aged 18 to 25. Continuing with community news, in July 2023 robbery, Rantoul man allowed to visit home before serving 10 years. This is by Luke Taylor. A Rantoul man who has been in custody since his arrest in a July 2023 robbery will be allowed to visit his grandmother and child for 2 weeks before reporting for a 10-year prison sentence. Amari Broughton, 24, pleaded guilty to armed robbery on Friday. In exchange for his plea, the state dismissed charges of aggravated discharge of a firearm and felon in possession of a firearm. Broughton has been in jail since his arrest in the July 3, 2023 incident, where a man was followed and robbed of money he'd withdrawn at a credit union. Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson said Broughton was inside the University of Illinois Credit Union on University Avenue in Champaign at the same time as a local businessman who had withdrawn $9,900 from his account. Broughton followed the man to his business and threatened him with what Larson described as a dangerous weapon. The man handed over an empty bank bag, but Broughton realized the cash wasn't inside and took it from the victim's pocket before fleeing. At the time, police said the victim then fired a gun in Broughton's direction and Broughton returned fire, but it didn't appear that either was struck. The victim recognized his assailant as the man who was doing business next to him at the credit union. Broughton had used identification at the credit union and was also identified in surveillance footage there and outside the victim's business. Video at the victim's business also captured the struggle and shots fired, according to the police report. After Broughton pleaded guilty, his attorney, Bart Beals, asked if he could have 2 weeks of furlough as his grandmother is suffering a serious illness and he hasn't seen his child while in custody. Champaign County Judge Matthew Lee said he and other judges had recently discussed the topic of furlough under the Illinois Pretrial Fairness Act and said the concept of furlough essentially no longer exists, as allowing it would imply that the court made an incorrect decision in requiring pretrial detention in the first place. It's this kind of interesting gray area where if I'm putting someone on pretrial release, I'm finding that the conditions that gave rise to the initial detention finding no longer exist, Lee said. Lee said the decision was a close call, but Broughton did only have one prior conviction. Larson said the state had no opinion on the matter, so Lee and Beals ultimately worked out an agreement in which Broughton's sentence officially begins April 18th, and he has granted pretrial release until that morning. He will be required to wear a GPS tracking device during his release. Lee warned Broughton that not reporting for his sentence could lead to additional felony charges and a significantly increased sentence. Once his sentence begins, Broughton will receive credit for 627 days previously served. After it ends, He will serve 18 months of parole and be required to repay the $9,900. In other community news, board votes to place teacher coach on leave. Robert Dinkins is under investigation for misconduct. This is by Dave Hinton, Gibson City. The Gibson City Melvin Sibley School Board has placed a middle school teacher coach on administrative leave as a result of two open investigations into misconduct. The board voted unanimously at a special meeting Thursday to take the action against Robert Dinkins, a 13-year employee of the district who teaches 8th grade math and serves as head coach of the GCMS Fisher Cooperative soccer team, the GCMS 8th grade boys basketball, and the middle school's boys track team. In 2024, he was named News Gazette All-Area Boys Soccer Coach of the Year for leading the team to its first regional title. Superintendent Jeremy Darnell said, after the district completes its investigation, which he anticipates will be done within a week, the board can take action to keep Dinkins on paid administrative leave, release him from leave, or fire him. He said the district does not have to wait for the conclusion of the law enforcement investigation, but if law enforcement finds additional information the district does not have, Dinkins' status could change. 18 members of the public attended the meeting, including two who spoke during the public comment period. Todd Heath, a Fisher track coach, spoke on behalf of children in the GCMS Fisher soccer program in support of Dinkins. Sarah Powell told the board she felt the administration and board did not communicate quickly and effectively enough, even though she realizes there are employee rights and confidentiality rights at play, according to Darnell. In a notification to families Friday, Darnell said he realizes children and adults are hurting, scared, sad, and angry, and everyone is allowed to have their own emotion based on their personal experience. The board released an outline of developments that led to its action against Dinkins. On March 24th, a parent showed text messages between their child and Dinkins to GCMS Middle School Principal Kent Nash and expressed concern about their content. Nash then discussed the allegations with Darrell. Dinkins was told to meet with Nash and was directed to stop using his personal device to communicate with any students. School Board President Phil Whitehouse was also notified. It was determined that more information and advice from legal counsel was needed. On March 25th, based on the evidence at the time, Darnell spoke with district legal counsel and continued meeting with other students and families. He said the additional information he had at that time did not indicate a need to place Dinkins on leave. He also reported all of his findings to the Department of Children and Family Services. The following day, the parents who provided the information to Nash filed a formal complaint requesting an outside investigator. Darnell informed Dinkins on March 27th that Dinkins would extend an already scheduled medical leave from March 28th to include March 27th.